today, markets rejoice on Trump turnarounds, but are things falling apart? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one that is post covering finance and problem news. This is our weekly market update, where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia, covering commodities and crypto along the way. I'm minded this week of a 1930s novel called Things Fall Apart, because it seems to me we saw a shattering of the Trump reform wave less than 100 days after his inauguration. Indeed, the Washington Post had a similar headline. Headlines from a 45-minute press conference on Thursday were all over the shop, raising questions about Trump's intentions on both the future of America's tariffs on China, the future of Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, and the broader topic of central bank independence. Meanwhile, in a highly anticipated speech directed at the IMF and the World Bank, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent confirmed that Trump had no plans, for now, to cut the Chinese tariff rate. And while a deal between the countries was one of Trump's big goals, talks could actually take years. While Donald Trump loves chaos and the world turning on his every utterance, this is a feature of his approach, not a bug. What's remarkable is that the markets keep falling for it. There's clearly precious little signal in all this noise. At the start of the week, markets fell hard, but then surged later on hopes that a trade deal with China was in the wings and that Trump wouldn't fire Powell, and later on reports that Trump was set to slash the tariff rate on China. The VIX, or fear gauge, was back down to 24.84 compared with the peak earlier in the week. Now, we should note that such wild rides on the market benefit traders as algorithmic trading grabs the momentum from those swinging headlines. Investors need to learn to live with these wild market swings, which are particularly bad now. The S&P 500 has gained or lost at least 1% in 7 of the past 10 sessions, putting April on track to be the most volatile calendar month since 2020. But while Trump's tariff war continues, we should expect these whipsaws to continue. The Dow ended slightly higher, up 2.48% for the week, actually, while the Nasdaq ended the week up 6.73%, and the MSCI Global Index lifted 3.95% to the end of the week on Friday, while the European Stoxx 600 was up 2.77% over the same period. The ASX 200, which was closed on Friday, was up 1.91% over the shortened week of trading. So it seems investors are not necessarily positioned as bearish as they might say they are. They want to believe that Trump's agenda is a bad fever dream that could end suddenly, but we'd better think again. Michael Every, the global strategist at Rabobank, summed it up like this. If you think that just because Trump said he isn't going to fire Powell in an era in which the independence of central banks is going to be called into question by the demands of realpolitik, or because he says something nice about China and tariffs for the nth time as the world starts to divide along geopolitical lines, well, clearly you enjoy fairy tales. There is a much higher risk of stagflation than recession in the US economy over the next year, while the asset class most expected to outperform in 2025 is cash. That's according to the results of a JP Morgan survey published on Friday. 57% of respondents expects Wall Street stocks to be the asset class with the largest outflows this year, and cash is expected to remain expensive as yields on the US 10-year note are not seen to be declining much from current levels. Over half of respondents believe the benchmark yield will be at or above 4.25% by the end of 2025. As we saw this week, the real action is indeed on the bond markets. The 10-year Treasury yield dived from 4.3% to 4.27%, then climbed all the way back up to 4.38% and then fell again to 4.235%. These moves are not normal. The 2-year also ended lower across the week, but again with significant volatility and was last at 3.756%. It's worth noting the S&P 500 has narrowed 10% since it bottomed on April the 8th. Perhaps even more remarkably, the index is now just 3.2% below where it closed on April the 2nd, hours before US President Donald Trump gave his Liberation Day speech. A key part of the rally has been the tech sector, with the magnificent seven stocks, Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft, Meta Platforms, Nvidia and Tesla, surging 10% in the past three sessions, although still well down year to date. This is more relief rally than real optimism, I think. An example was provided when Alphabet, the owner of Google and YouTube, surged more than 4% in after-hours trading after delivering its March quarter results. The 2% rise on the S&P 500 on Thursday night was particularly surprising, given China's denial that any trade negotiations, or indeed even any trade talks, are underway with the US, which is in complete contrast to Trump's assurances a day earlier that the two sides were in constant contact. Someone is not telling the full story here. Then, as former JP Morgan strategist Mike Kovanovich said on X, we are now close to pre-Liberation Day levels in the S&P 500, which strikes me as way too optimistic. What CEOs have seen since can't be unseen. And remember, the lagged effects of Trump's tariff war will take about a month to start hitting the West Coast of America. So given US and China trade effectively shut down on April the 10th, and it takes about 30 days for a container to get from China to Los Angeles, the initial hit to trade will be around May the 10th. 2 weeks after that, as containers travel by sea or rail to Houston and Chicago, the pain will reach more parts of the country. There are already signs, though, that damage has occurred. According to the Financial Times, Chinese factories are slowing production and standing workers down. Shipping cancellation rates into the US have reached 10%, and year-on-year trucking activity out of Los Angeles has fallen 23% already. BCA research is warning that equity markets are not adequately pricing in the risks of a US recession, even a mild one, flagging more downside potential for stocks. Despite a recent pullback in tariff policy by President Trump, the investment research firm maintains a 75% probability that the US economy will contract this year. Stocks are not priced for even a mild recession, which suggests that risk to equities is to the downside, they said. The S&P 500 forward price-to-earnings ratio stands at 19.9, which is significantly above the levels seen in even mild recessions. Forward 12-month earnings projections remain flat, even though history shows that earnings estimates often fall around 20% during downturns. So the idea that investors are still willing to buy into the S&P 500 when it's historically expensive and before a recession that could smash corporate profits and reset valuations lower is very brave indeed. And it concerns high yield spreads remain relatively tight despite rising default rates, signaling complacency in credit markets. BCA's cautiousness is also partially driven by weakening US economic data. Business sentiment in the country has deteriorated due to persistent tariff uncertainty, with capital expenditure plans being postponed. Moreover, first quarter GDP estimates have dropped sharply, with some models forecasting contraction. Tariff front running could be replaced by tariff front weighting, the note emphasized. And elsewhere, RBC Capital Markets assessed the scope of potential fallout across global commodities and mining equities. The findings paint a cautious but data-grounded picture of sectoral vulnerability if the trade war deepens. According to RBC, even if tariffs were to be rolled back in full, a scenario deemed highly unlikely, the damage from broken trade relationships and heightened uncertainty will linger. The current reality, however, suggests ongoing escalation, they said. They believe current market valuations haven't fully accounted for potential worst-case scenarios, with the cost curve remaining a critical benchmark. And talking about sentiment, the latest University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey showed that driven by plunging forward-looking expectations, consumer sentiment fell to one of the lowest readings on record, and both short and longer-term anticipation of inflation marched even higher. So the question is, will the hard data follow, we ask? About 180 S&P 500 companies, representing about 40% of the index market value, are set to post quarterly results in the coming week, according to UBS. Chief among them are Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Meta. But it may be too soon to see the consequences of the fallout, which is all happening in hyperspeed. Gold reached a record peak before falling back to be 0.9% lower by Friday for the week at 3,330.36. Silver was at $33.028. Elsewhere in commodities trading, crude oil for delivery in June rose 0.75% to hit $63.19 a barrel, while the June Brent oil contract rose 0.74% to trade at $66.98 a barrel, but both contracts still fell around 2% over the week after Reuters reported that several oil-producing nations in the OPEC cartel are pushing to accelerate output hikes in June, extending May's surprise boost as internal disputes over quota compliance deepens. The euro-US dollar was unchanged at 1.1363, while the US dollar-Japanese yen rose 0.74% to 143.67, and the US dollar futures index was up 0.23% to 99.60 after a sharp rebound from a three-year low in the previous sessions. We suspect the US dollar will recover some lost ground over the coming months as its usual relationship with rate differentials reasserts itself, said analysts at Cabell Economics in a note from April the 25th. They say, while the Trump administration's unconventional approach across a range of policy areas will probably cause some longer-lasting loss of confidence to the US as a safe haven, they said, a lack of credible alternative to the dollar means that it will still likely remain central to the global financial system and to be the world's major reserve currency for some time to come yet. Remember that the IMF recently predicted that US economic growth will decrease by a full percentage point to 1.8% in 2025, down from 2.8% last year. European equity indices edged higher on Friday, ending a largely positive week on the up, as investors digested more quarterly corporate earnings amid persistent trade uncertainty. The DAX index in Germany climbed 0.8%, the CAC 40 in France gained 0.5%, and the FTSE in London rose 0.1%. Adding to optimism, data released earlier on Friday showed that British retail sales unexpectedly rose 0.4% in March after downwardly revised growth of 0.7%. For the first quarter as a whole, retail sales rose by 1.6%, the strongest reading in 4 years, providing a much-needed boost to the UK economy, even after a survey by the British Retail Consortium said the US tariffs will weigh heavily on consumer confidence. But the GFK Consumer Confidence Index did indeed drop by 4 points to minus 23 in April, marking the weakest reading since November 2023. The decline reflects the pressure from domestic tax increases, higher household bills, and concerns that Trump's tariffs could trigger another inflationary wave. According to GFK's data, the measure of expectations for the general economic situation in the next 12 months dropped by 8 points to minus 37, significantly worse than the reading from April 2024. The outlook for personal finances also weakened, falling 4 points to minus 3, which is 5 points lower year over year. However, the outlook for UK interest rates also appears to be improving. UBS highlighted several factors contributing to disinflation, including the strength of the British pound, lower energy prices, changes in global trade, and a cooling labour market. Those elements are anticipated to support a continued dovish shift by the Monetary Policy Committee, the MPC. The IMF forecast growth in Britain will hit 1.1% in 2025. That's 0.5 percentage points below the January forecast that they made, edging higher to 1.4% in 2026, reflecting the impact of recent tariff announcements, higher gilt yields, and weaker private consumption. Growth in the euro area was also set to slow to 0.8% in 2025 and 1.2% in 2026, with both forecasts about 0.2 percentage points down from their January forecast. And the IMF said Spain was an outlier, though, with a 2.5% growth forecast for 2025. That's a 0.2 percentage point upward revision, reflecting stronger data. Offsetting forces included stronger consumption due to rising wages and a projected fiscal easing in Germany after several major changes in its debt break. The IMF cut its growth forecast for Germany by 0.3 percentage points to flat in 2025 and by 0.2 percentage points to 0.9% in 2026. Most Asian stocks advanced on Friday, with technology shares tracking stellar overnight gains in their US peers. Japanese markets were the best performers in the region, as optimism over US trade talks helped them rally past hotter-than-expected Tokyo inflation data that pushed up expectations of more interest rate hikes by the Bank of Japan. Gains in tech boosted the Nikkei, while Japan's TOPIX also added 1.1%. This came even as Tokyo Consumer Price Index inflation rose sharply in April, beating expectations up 3.5% year-on-year from 2.9% in the prior month. Now, this will grant the Bank of Japan more headroom to raise interest rates. The central bank is widely expected to keep interest rates steady when it meets next week, but expectations for more hikes later this year are growing steadily. Japanese markets have been on a tear this week after a report showed government officials were set to begin a new round of US trade talks later in the month, and another round of bumper wage hikes stemming from springtime wage negotiations are set to boost private consumption, in turn underpinning inflation over the coming months. This trend is expected to elicit more rate hikes and hawkish measures from the Bank of Japan. Tech-heavy exchanges such as Hong Kong's Hang Seng and South Korea's KOSPI also advanced. Among individual stocks, Baidu soared 4% in Hong Kong trade after the Chinese internet giant launched updated versions of its flagship ERNIE AI model. And electric vehicle maker BYD rose following quarterly earnings. China's Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indices lagged their peers, moving in a flat to low range on Friday. Underperformance in Chinese markets came as investors fretted over the long-term economic impact of a bitter trade war with the United States after Washington and Beijing exchanged steep trade tariffs earlier in the month. The IMF cut China's growth forecast to 4% for 2025, and 2026, reflecting respective downward revisions of 0.6 percentage points and 0.5 percentage points from their January forecast. They said the impact of the tariffs on China, hugely dependent on exports, was about 1.3 percentage points in 2025, but that was offset by stronger fiscal measures. The governor of the People's Bank of China criticized the United States on Friday for its recent use of tariffs, which he claimed is threatening global financial stability. And he also announced that China's central bank plans to lower the reserve requirements ratio and policy rate based on economic and financial developments domestically and internationally, as well as financial market performance. He said, "We will adopt a policy mix to keep liquidity abundant, lower the liability cost of banks, and persistently bring down the overall financing costs for the real economy." At the close, India's Nifty 50 declined 0.86% as the disruption with Pakistan grew worse, remembering, of course, markets hate uncertainty, and the Indian VIX, which measures the implied volatility of the Nifty 50, was up 6.08% to 1724. Now, on Thursday, after recent falls, the Australian share market posted its best weekly gain this year. The ASX 200 rose 0.6% to close at 7,968, extending its weekly gain to 2.3%. The All Ordinaries also rose 0.6% on Thursday. 8 of 11 sectors were in the green, led by healthcare in the holiday-shortened trading week. Gold stocks tracked a rebound in gold prices as some investors returned to safe haven assets. Emerald Resources lifted 3.3% to $4.04, and Newmont rose 3.5% to $85.20 as investors shrugged off a 19% fall in the US gold miners' quarterly output. Iron ore miners rose as prices of the steel-making ingredient neared $100 a ton before falling back, with BHP up 0.9% to $38.06. Banks also extended gains through the session, with Westpac adding 1.1% to $30.04 and ANZ by 1.6% to $28.84. Commonwealth Bank was up 0.6% to $164.72 after a stronger run this week, and Macquarie was $192.72. Oil stocks bucked the trend as Brent crude held near a two-week low amid reports that OPEC was mulling a further supply increase. Heavyweight Woodside dropped 2% to $20.01. A rally in uranium stocks continued on Thursday, helped by Paladin Energy. The stock surged 12.1% to $5.56 added to Wednesday's 24.6% leap after it posted record quarterly production at its Langer Heinrich mine. Boss Energy and Deep Yellow rallied more than 8% to $2.83 and $1.03 respectively. Sleep device maker ResMed helped buoy the ASX 200's healthcare sector, rallying 8.5% to $30.08 after it told investors it received an exemption from Trump's tariffs. Generation Development sank 14.9% to $4.13 after a trading update in which the life insurer reported growth in assets under management across all investment divisions fell short of investors' expectations. And PWR Holdings slid 5.7% to $6.32 after the company notified investors its founder and chief executive, Kees Weel, was taking temporary medical leave to seek treatment. The long slump in AMP's share price has left brokers pondering something they haven't for years. Could it be time to invest in the long maligned wealth management giant 5 years after it was eviscerated by a royal commission that found it repeatedly lied to the corporate regulator? Over the past week, Citi, Goldman Sachs, and JP Morgan have shifted their recommendations on the stock, suggesting clients buy after a first quarter update showed AMP's assets were growing. The 176-year-old wealth manager said $740 million had come into its funds over the 3 months to March 31, taking it to $78.8 billion, up 6.1% over the year. Its price was last at 1.210. Now, inflation will be the spotlight in Australia, where the quarterly CPI reading will be published next Wednesday. The Reserve Bank of Australia has only cut rates once during this cycle amid slow progress in getting inflation under control. The monthly measure did dip from 2.5 to 2.4% year over year in February in a huge relief after rising for three consecutive months. The quarterly figure covering the first 3 months of 25 is expected to inch lower too, but for the RBA, the underlying gauge of CPI will be more important. If they extend their decline in the first quarter and the monthly rate also falls, there will be nothing stopping the RBA from cutting rates in May. However, this may not necessarily trigger much reaction to the Australian dollar, as a 25 basis point cut is already fully priced in for May and for almost every other meeting in the remainder of the year. The Aussie was last at 63.98 cents to the US dollar and 48.06 cents to the UK pound. Finally, in crypto, Max Keiser, prominent financial journalist and currently the advisor to El Salvador's president on All Things Bitcoin, has taken to social media platform X to oppose a popular narrative among traders and strategists that Bitcoin is routinely coupled with tech stocks. Keiser has commented in a tweet that featured an excerpt from an interview with the CEO of Ritz-Holtz wealth management company, Josh Brown, who stated that over the last week or two, it decoupled from the NASDAQ, meaning Bitcoin. Keiser, who is a vocal Bitcoin maximist, reacted to that, stating that Bitcoin has always been following its own vector. Bitcoin has never coupled with anything, he said, adding his favorite refrain, everything goes to zero against Bitcoin. And he's recently resumed sharing his ultra-bullish prediction that Bitcoin is headed for 220,000 US. One of the experts who would have been vocal about Bitcoin's correlation with the tech NASDAQ index has been the senior commodity strategist at Bloomberg Intelligence, Mike McGlone. He believes that Bitcoin is about to crash similarly to the NASDAQ in 2000 when the dot-com bubble burst. Meanwhile, the world's largest cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, was last at $94,345. Pro-crypto SEC Chairman Paul Atkins, a former SEC commissioner, on April the 22nd was sworn in to the SEC and he promised to give top priority to establishing a fair and adequate regulatory framework for digital currencies. And ahead, US recession concerns will either be fueled or reduced in the coming week as there's a flurry of top-tier economic releases on the way. Kicking things off on Tuesday will be the Consumer Confidence Index for April and the JOLTS job openings for March. On Wednesday, the advanced estimate for GDP growth will be monitored very closely amid some predictions that the US economy contracted in the first quarter. But the real highlight will be on Friday, the non-farm payrolls report, amidst the intense speculation about how soon the Fed will cut rates. Jobs growth is projected to have slowed from 228,000 in March to 130,000 in April, with the unemployment rate staying unchanged at 4.2%. Average earnings probably grew by 0.3% in April. And elsewhere, of course, Canadians will be voting in a general election on Monday after former Bank of England and Bank of Canada Governor Mark Carney called a snap vote following Justin Trudeau's resignation. Carney's Liberal Party was all set to lose the election until Trump's trade tirade reinvigorated the party among voters. There's still room for surprises, however, as the Liberals may fail to win a majority, and with their current coalition partners, the New Democrat Party, expected to lose most of its seats, a hung parliament may not go down well with Canada's stock market and the local dollar. Anyway, in summary, we should continue to see more market volatility as the Trump beer myth rolls on. A beer myth, by the way, is defined as a huge or monstrous person or thing, which frankly seems appropriate as we try to figure out the full consequences and ask whether things will indeed fall apart. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.